Welcome to the 8th preseason Supercoach Coach Podcast of 2015. I'm Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. 8 weeks. Are you sick of me yet?
Almost. I'm more sick of the preseason, to be honest, mate. I'm feeling the length of it now. The fact that the Cricket World Cup is delaying the start of the season. Just waiting for rookies to come through and going back and forth on pretty similar decisions. And it's the first time we've done 8 episodes with 2 more to go. So we'll do 10 episodes this preseason, spread out over 10 weeks. It's the first time we've ever done that, Mark. So it is a long preseason, but I think you'll agree it's been a rather good one and I've really enjoyed doing the show. So looking forward to tackling tonight's show about the backline. How about
the
you?
The one that we've been dreading since the start of the preseason. I know in that first preseason podcast, we were talking about potentially creative solutions in the back line, and I wonder whether we're still thinking that 8 weeks later.
So we'll get into all of that, but just before we do, just going to plug our open leagues. Remember, you can head over to supercoachcoach.com.au and you'll find our league codes there together with this, our Supercoach Coach group invitation. Next week to forecast, we're going to head to the final NAB Cup review because we're going to have all the games played by the end of this weekend and we're going to take a closer look at the rookies, Mark. So we've been asked quite a bit about the rookies for the backline this show, but we're barely going to get through them all with the time that we have this episode. So we're going to save the rookies after we watch another round of the NAB Cup next week. And then our final preseason show will be released on the Wednesday, 1 day before lockout. So in time to get that last bit of information before season kicks off, Mark. Just to line up this week's show, we're going to start up with follow-up questions and move to the defenders, and we're going to look at them individually. Different players that have been asked by the community on facebook.com/supercoachcoach and at supercoachcoach. And then to finish things off, Mark, we'll do the mid-price first premium discussion right at the end after we've covered off all the options. So that's sort of the layout for tonight. And we'll jump straight into a follow-up question, Mark. Ablett injury cause for concern or not? Important enough to deviate from intended backline focus. So as was just forecasted, huge show, but a lot of conversation about leaving Ablett out because he's sitting out because of a sore shoulder, Mark.
He sure is. He's indicating that he hasn't fully recovered. The word is that he's struggling a little bit to get full strength into the shoulder and get full rotations as well, and that he hasn't been able to show those things in drills to the extent that he thinks that they would be able to do it in a game. He is definitely a concern. There's talk that he won't even play round one, and if he does, he'll maybe play up forward, or it's definitely thrown a spanner in the works, which is a bit exciting at this time of the year. I think we could easily spend probably an entire show just on this decision. For me, my first instinct is to potentially leave him out of this stage. Fully priced, I can probably get another look at him. If he gets off to a slow start, then pick him up slightly cheaper. I don't see him coming out of the bag and averaging 140 with an injury.
It's going to be an interesting one, Mark. I think line ball, call, and like you, I've been looking this preseason. We talked about this topic earlier in this preseason already. We've been looking at an opportunity to leave him out. And so now that the injury is propped up, I think that's potentially an avenue to gain an edge if Ablett does fall. The owners of Gary Ablett will probably drop somewhere in the realms of 100K in value if he gets off to even 115 or 120 start, Mark. So looking at that at the moment, but really line ball call, and we've got 2 more weeks to make that
definitely
decision.
Line ball.
So we'll move on to the back line now and move on into even muddier territory, perhaps. We'll start off with Tim Lee, and he's asked about 3 of the top line defenders from last year. So Nick Malcheski, Cade Simpson, and Sean Burgoyne. Do you like any of those 3, Mark?
No, none of those guys have actually entered my team at any stage. I think Malcheski stands out from the rest, being about 560,000, coming off a huge average last year of 105, and he had a big average in the past before. I just think that playing for Sydney in a team that makes a grand final, where there's heaps of other stars to be tagging, versus going to the Suns, where he's going to be the obvious key guy coming out of defence, I think there's a pretty big difference there. He has had a few injury concerns in the past. What's he had? 2 knee recos, so no guarantee. He's a fitness. I'm very reluctant to pay that much money for any defender this year, even if he is the standout scorer. I certainly don't expect him to average more than 105 this year.
this episode, Mark, because we're going to have to go through so many options because we're going to look at more mid prices than we do normally because it's actually relevant in the back line this year. If we don't have anything particularly to add, then we just move over it and only give one opinion on it. Cover a lot of players that way, but if you've got any follow-up questions, remember you can always just ask us on social media and we'll get to it next week. So yeah, I agree with you with Malcheski. Cade Simpson's one that's actually been in quite a lot of draft teams, I noticed, and that's because he's pretty reliable. He's pretty good for a 90 plus average. He's averaged 94 plus in the last 6 seasons, so very, very consistent. And in a year where most of the options are looking like decent chances of maybe even dropping in scoring, Cade Simpson, with his reliability, is looking actually pretty decent.
Missed 3 games since 2006. Was a bit up and down last year, but yeah, like you say, does have that consistency with average. Sean Burgoyne, just feel like most of the Hawks are managed throughout the season a little bit. If he was playing midfield all the time, he would probably be a 110 plus averaging midfielder. He's an absolute gun when they get him in the middle and they actually want to win the games, but he does play roles a lot of weeks, and given that, he could average anywhere between 85 and 95, which is probably not enough for the price that you're paying for him at the start, and there are better options.
He averaged 100 in his first season with Hawthorn, and then in his next three he averaged 80 82 and 85, so there's a pretty decent chance that based on role or management he could drop. Personally, not very hot on Sean Burgoyne. Brendan King's question's next up, and he's asking about Brody Smith. Will he continue his upward trend? He's a young gun amongst a flock of aging stars in the back line, and so because of that, he's made a lot of teams.
Brody Smith was in my team for the first probably 8 weeks and has only recently come out. His progression that they're talking about, 50, 65, 75, 93. So there's a clear progression upwards there. Part of that is, though, that I think he's going to cop a fair bit of attention this season. We saw in the preseason game on the weekend against Geelong that Guthrie went to Smith, and when he played the Bombers last year, we sent Hocking to him as well. He's seen as a very dangerous player because of his kicking ability, which means that I'm sort of coming around to the fact that maybe he doesn't present as much value as I thought and isn't as reliable as I thought, and maybe I'm better off going with one of those older blokes.
It'd be impressive to really back that up in his fifth season. To improve would be really, really great. But I think even just maintaining that, like you said, with the increased attention, will already be quite a challenge. And I certainly have cooled as well. Heath Shaw is a guy who I've sort of moved a little bit toward as I've cooled off Brody Smith. Have you looked at Heath Shaw over the preseason, Mark, as value in his price point at the moment?
Yeah, he can go so big, and the GWS do have a pretty good draw for the first half of the year. Definitely been in my side. I want to pick him because I think that he can definitely average around 100 or even potentially higher than that over a shorter period of time. My main concern is he has never played more than 19 games since 2008. There's a long, long history of suspension and injury. That really worries me. If he's going to miss 2 games, then that really affects his projected average and takes a lot of value away from him. So he looked really good against the Bombers on the week. And getting plenty of ball up and around the wing, and with Patful there, I think it'll help him out. So yeah, I think he's a pretty good selection. It's just the durability that's giving me a concern.
Good that you brought that up, Mark, because sometimes I do forget about that. So I do have to take that into account when accounting for that potential upside. I have to account for that potential downside too. Luke Hodge is another player with such potential downside, Mark, and I've been drawn to him over the preseason and been shunned for bringing him up, and rightly so, because of his long injury history. Is he a guy that you're steering clear of? We obviously both started him last year.
And it didn't really work out for us. He came really good in the second half of the year, but from the start of the year, he was quite a pretty average pick for us. Didn't quite work out as we were hoping. And he's even cheaper this year. Look, I haven't been drawn to him at all after all my experiences last year. I think that his injury history, the fact that he'll be managed, the fact that Hawthorn rotate their players through all the positions so much in order to get them ready for the finals. Maybe he's someone that's really good to bring in mid-year because he did have a pretty good back end to last year. He really hasn't even been on my radar this year, mate. Although I have seen him in a heap of teams.
I think something that probably costs him a little bit as he's grown older is the fact that the sub rules come into play. If he gets any sort of niggle, they just wrap him up in cotton wool and put him on ice, and that can really blunt your averages as well if you continually miss out on last quarters or injury affected games as well, dragging down your actual average. So not hot on him. The 3 games that he missed last year I really noticed as well, and I think that's a really important thing to bring up, just that missed games. You really notice it, especially last year when all hell breaks loose. Maybe we won't won't have that happen again this year, though. Michael Hibberd is the guy that we've got up next, and Sam Siddall's asked about both him and Corey Enright. First up, Hibberd, Mark, plays for Essendon, which is obviously a little bit of an unknown at the moment, but assuming he plays, would you be happy to start him?
Yeah, he was actually my first pick player in the back line at the start of the preseason and hasn't left since. Obviously, if he's suspended for however long that might be, then he would come out. But if he isn't and he's ready to play round one, then he's an absolute lock for my team. Presents heaps of value at 91, still young, did play 22 games in 2013 and averaged 96. I'd expect him to play an even bigger role this year because he does seem to be getting better each year. So, yeah, I think that he is an awesome pick.
Is a noted short-term injury risk. He does get soft tissue injuries. That is something to note. Yeah. The next guy, Corey Enright, that Sam asked about.
I'm surely too old.
That's probably where I sit on him as well. And even though he presents value at that price, it's probably because he's starting to taper off, and that's when you actually want to stay away from them.
There's been a slow decline over like 6 years. You can just see a couple of points every year. He hasn't played 22 games since 2009 because he's always going to get a rest at his age as Geelong prepares for the finals. So great player, probably score reasonably well this year, but I think there's just better options.
Dean Phelps is asked about past premium. Grant Birchall from Hawthorn, what do you reckon about him? We have talked about him pretty highly in the past.
He did a knee injury at training in early February. He might be available around the round one or round two mark, but that's sort of made a big impact late in his preseason. Definitely has the potential to score really high over a shortish period. Did play 22 games last year, but just those doubts on his preseason are probably enough to make him close to unpickable.
Next question is from Stephen Ben. He said, the NAB Cup last week made him have another look at James Kelly. Cat said he and Bartel likely to spend more time in the midfield to improve clearances and contested ball. Could easily be a top eight defender if that's the case. So did bring him up last week as just a little bit of a smoky. Obviously, I like him. I'm a Geelong supporter and I brought him up. Maybe a less biased opinion. Mark, what do you reckon?
Coming in a bit underpriced. If he is legitimately going to be moving into the midfield a bit more this year, then he has potentially a 10-point improvement in him. So given his age, he is potentially a little bit like Enright, that he is probably going to get rested maybe one game during the season. But the difference is that Enright was on the slide, unlikely to average more than he did last year, whereas James Kelly potentially has a 10-point improvement in him. So for me, that's probably enough to make him very much on the table.
I don't know if I see Kelly necessarily averaging 100, and he certainly, with his age and Geelong's management, is a chance, good chance to miss games, which is another factor as well. But the fact that he has clear upside puts him fairly squarely on the watch list. I've got him lined up in my team at the moment. That's all that really needs to be said, I guess. Moving on to Cameron Lockhead's question. He's asking about Alex Rance, so a key position defender, which is a little bit different, Mark, but we have seen him in patches average 95, even 100. So do you think he could keep that up on an extended basis? He has averaged 84 plus for at least 4 years now, actually slowly improving each year, 84, 86.5, 87.1, and 88.5. So
when you look at the raw numbers like that, it looks like, yeah, he's probably a really good pick, especially if Richmond improve this year. He's a very talented player. It has a lot of impact in that back half for the Tigers. I think that it'd be pretty hard to watch him the way he kicks the ball sometimes. That'd be a bit frustrating as a supporter. I think if you're going to pay that much, you're probably going to go for a midfieldy type defender. And I haven't seen him in anyone's team, but that doesn't mean he's a terrible pick. Going purely by the numbers, it seems like he would probably turn out okay.
I don't know if I'd personally pick a key position player, especially a key position defender. Even when Harry Taylor was doing well, I never really picked him, and I really love Harry Taylor. So I'd imagine he probably won't come into my team, but
Want a bit more value.
But wouldn't say that he's a poor pick at all. Next guy, though, Andrew Walker.
We haven't seen him in the preseason yet because he's still suffering with that knee injury, as far as I'm aware, that he suffered with last year that caused him to miss the games and be managed within games. I think that's just enough to write him off. Look, he definitely has upside based on his average, but given the fact that it's a chronic ongoing injury, I just don't think he's pickable.
Next guy, Shannon Hearn, Mark. Have we talked about him, Shannon Hearn?
I don't think we have. New captain at the Eagles.
So I have picked him in the past. I have called on him and have suggested that unless West Coast are a top four side, he's probably not going to be a premium defender. And I think I'm still probably sitting on that. Mark, where are you at with him?
Yeah, I guess now that he's become a captain again, he probably provides a little bit more value. Definitely has struggled with durability at times in the past in his career. He's a seriously awesome player. He kicks the ball as well as anyone in the AFL from a distance. But because of that, he gets a lot of attention, and that probably limits his ceiling a little bit. So, yeah, he hasn't really been on my radar.
And he is strong in a contest as well. He's thick through the body.
Just look at him. He's pretty.
He's a brute of a man. So yeah, I can understand people picking him. I've been tempted many times, but probably burnt too many times. Basha Hooley from Richmond is the next guy, 447,000. Matt Sloan's asked about him. What do you reckon? Richmond with the rebounding from the back line. Basha Hooley's had 90 points doing that role before. Do you think he can return to that?
Maybe you'll be able to call me out on this one day, but I can't see myself picking a trader. Just now, but someone that's left my club, I really can't see myself picking him. I know that you've to do it with Ablett, but genuinely, if there's a line ball call, I'm not going to pick that player.
Okay, all right, that's fair. I can understand the reasoning behind picking him. I can't pick any pattern to his scoring, and he's a fairly established player. So based on that, I don't really know. He could average 80 or he could average 90 this year. Next player is Harry Taylor from the Geelong Cats. Matt Sloan also asked about him. Priced pretty much at the exact same price point, 447,000. Key position defender who we just talked about, and I just said I never picked Taylor, even though I really love him as a player. This year, though, he's priced at 83 after managing a high of 94 the year before, so I guess that's why people are looking at him. Have you considered him at all this preseason, Mark?
No, I haven't. Do you think his average went down last year because he was played up forward a little bit more? And that won't happen if Clark plays up forward this year?
To be honest, watching Harry Taylor play, I think that he should be able to get about 80 points as a baseline average, but then anything extra to that, it's really circumstantial and it's very hard to predict, I think. He is quite a defensive player. He does play sometimes on the most dangerous forward, and that does limit his ability to score. He gets a lot of points from contested marks, but I think that really 80 is around his baseline, and you're hoping for him to maybe snag 10 goals one year in order to boost up to a 90 average. And that's just really so unpredictable because it'll take somebody randomly going down in a game for him to get that option. And I just think he's a player that's probably a bit too hard to predict in terms of upside. Moving on to Keaton Martin's question, he's asking about Sam Fisher from St Kilda. He says not many people are actually looking at him or agreeing with him, but he's pretty interested in the veteran. What do you think about him?
I'm surprised that he's not encountering people that are agreeing with him. I've actually heard a lot of people talk about Sam Fisher as an option this preseason coming back because he does have a significantly higher average that he could attain. He's averaged over 100 in the past and over 90 on several occasions. The fact that he hasn't played more than 15 games since 2011 in a season is definitely worrying and hasn't played more than 10 the last 2 years. I know he's had a much better preseason and he could be over some of that stuff, but yeah, just his durability is too much of a risk for me. I think that could definitely be some value there. He definitely has some good big games in him. And the ball's going to be down there a lot this year. But his durability is enough to write him off for me.
And I think another thing to note is that when he scored really well, he used to be a little bit more of a third tall rebounding defender. He played a bit more like Corey Enright, but as he got older, he's had to play more as a key defender because they have a young back line. And so that's something that he'll still have to go back down there and play some roles that won't score him very many points during some points of the season. So based off that, not a huge fan of him either. The next guy that we're going to look at is Chris Yaren. Ken Walsh is asking whether he can take the next step up and be a top six defender. What do you think about that, Mark? That's a pretty big call.
It is, and look, yeah, I think he can. He hasn't been in any of my teams, but I have definitely toyed around with the idea. I think that he's maturing, he's finally coming into his seventh season, and he is ready to average 90+. I think that probably my main concern with him would be that he starts playing so well that he actually gets more attention. I know he had a huge game on the weekend, but I'd sort of had him as potential before that. And yeah, look, I think that just in that perfect position that he looks like a player that could average at least 90, probably more. Never has in the past, but he's entering his seventh season. And yeah, I have a bit of love for Chris Yaren.
Yeah, I think I actually tend to agree with you there, Mark. If you look at his averages, they tend to really be brought down by games where he's either gotten injured or just had a really, really poor game. And sometimes he has scores in the single digits. And so if you take those sorts of games out, as you would as a seventh-year player, you would hope, Mark, that could see his average jump up a fair bit. So I have liked his potential in the past, and I haven't actually put him in my team before, Mark, but that was a pretty good argument for him. I liked it. Next guy that we're going to look at is Lumumba. J. Dave from Twitter has asked about him. So a guy who shifted clubs and really come into contention because of really strong preseason showing, Mark. He has really performed for the Melbourne Demons. Do you think he can score well in the midfield for them this year?
You know that I really don't like picking players that I don't like, and Harry O definitely fits into that category.
Yeah.
He's one of the top of the list in there. But look, if he actually plays up the ground a little bit more with Melbourne, I can see him scoring quite well. I think his preseason numbers are probably a bit inflated, but brings a bit of experience to that team and maybe may flourish under the Paul Roos environment. He's not coming into my team, but I can understand why people might pick him.
Too susceptible to a 40 or 50 score, so not on my radar at all, to be honest.
The fact that he has 10 seasons and only once has averaged over 80 doesn't bode great for him.
Sean Higgins is the next guy we're going to talk about. Been in and out of my team more recently, Mark.
Really? How much is he?
He's 400,000, but look, he has averaged...
You're not getting much of a discount there.
That is true, but he has averaged 90 in seasons past, and he has...
No. Okay, Manukau, come on. You got 9 years of Supercoach scoring. He's never played more than 20 games, so pretty much always gets injured. He's got 2 seasons out of 9 where he's averaged over 80. Convince me that he could change his tune this year and would be a good selection for your team.
Simply put, since he's turned into a good player, Western Bulldogs have not really been contenders. And he's not a type of player that does well in a team that's not a contender. And that's unfortunate. Unfortunately, he isn't the best player. But in terms of Supercoach, he can still certainly be a functional premium if he gets the right opportunity in the right team. And that's just my two cents. I think that in 2009, the Western Bulldogs were still all right. And he got some midfield time. He averaged 89. And he still managed to average 80 despite having poor preseasons and having injury-affected years. And he's been playing for the Western Bulldogs. I think in North Melbourne, when you've got Wells, when you've got Del Santo, when you've got so many other players to take the attention away, all he's doing is being a role player. And if they are a top four team, there's no reason that if he's playing wing half forward, that he can't chip in an average 90 or 95. And I think that'd be a really good result for that price.
Jeez, that'd be an amazing result for that price, considering he's never done that before. Look, I really hope you pick him, because I want to have an I told you so show later in the year when he gets injured.
All right, here's the thing though. He's 400,000. Most of the mid prices that we're going to cover now are cheaper than that. That's why I haven't got to them yet. We're doing them by price. So at worst, he doesn't work out. I trade him to one of the mid prices. So I'm picking him instead of a mid price. I'm paying extra money for him. I think I'd rather take that risk than take a risk on a mid price. And if they don't work out, which is, let's be honest, pretty likely considering the track record of mid-price defenders, having to trade them out anyway. I mean, either way, it's a risky position, don't you think?
Yep, absolutely. Can we start talking about those mid-prices?
Yeah, so we've got a lot on the run sheet. And the first one James Russell has asked about, and that's Dane Rampey from Sydney. So he's at about 400,000, one of the more expensive mid-prices that we're actually going to look at. And 76 is his average in his second season playing AFL. You reckon he can improve of that, playing that third defender role?
Maseski leaving, that's probably why people would be picking him. The fact that he's played 2 seasons of 20 and 22 games bodes very well for him. I see him improving. I don't really see him improving to a 90-plus average, really. That's a pretty big progression for a young man, even though he is sort of one of the young leaders at the Swans. It hasn't really been in my consideration, but he does have some improvement in him, and there are reasonably good reasons why someone would pick him.
At least Sean Higgins has averaged 89 before.
Yeah, but she's also played 9 seasons. Rampy's played 2.
All right. He's a good, solid player, but in order to improve your average by 15 points in your third season, you need to be quite a quality player. I'm not quite sure if he has that class. Next question is from Tomcat. I'd like to hear our thoughts on KK. So, Cade Kolodziejczyk.
So bad. Oh, that's awesome.
All right, Mark, go for it. Colin Jasp. Tell me about him.
Oh, God. He plays for the Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah.
And he has a brother that also plays for your team, Marcus.
Yeah.
He averaged 68 last year, missed the preseason, so I don't think you can read too much into that. There's a bit of talk that he'll play a little bit further up the ground this year, maybe on a wing. Super talented. I think he was a top five pick a couple of years ago, and great kick on him. At Gold Coast, one of the great advantages that he's going to have while he's still young is Marchesi's come in, and you've got Bennell and Ablett and Prestia and all these other players that are going to get the real attention. So he should be able to run reasonably freely. And look, I think he's a really good pick. I really like him as a player. You wouldn't normally pick a second-year player. If you were ever going to do it, it would probably be in this year's backline because you just don't need him to improve like that much. The Suns have a great draw. There's a whole bunch of really good reasons to pick him.
I think if I'm taking a second-year player,
I'm taking Sean Higgins.
I feel like I just want a thicker player. He's still got size to pack on. He is a taller guy. Or a guy that's playing for maybe a top four team. And, Gold Coast will be pushing the eight, but that's not a guaranteed thing yet. So you just want to make sure the team's at least performing because it is hard being a second-year player. Like you said, though, if there's a time to pick it, it is probably the back line this year. Having said
that... You do raise some pretty good points. Man, he's a pretty risky pick.
Next guy, Brad Shepherd from the West Coast Eagles. So we've actually had quite a lot of questions about him, quite a lot of incorrect spellings of his name too. It's S-H-E-P-P-A-R-D is Brad Shepherd.
How's the pronunciation going there, mate?
Yeah, this one's a little bit easier than Carla. Yeah, this one's a bit easier. 359,000 was a top 10 draft pick. What do you reckon?
I find him really tricky to get a good read on. His highest average ever was 67 last year. Or every year before that, averaged in the 50s. He's never played more than 14 games in a season. There's something that seems different, though, this year. Like, he's only ever scored 100 in Supercoach once before, and he's had two preseason games, and he's hit the 116 in the second one of them. The fact that Waters is retired... McKenzie's injured. There's a role back there for him. The fact that Hearn gets so much attention as well means that the tag's always going to go to Hearn. They're never going to go to Shepherd instead of him. So there's some extra ball movement room for him back there and some points available. So looking at just at the numbers, he looks like a terrible pick. I think there are some really good reasons why he's actually a good pick. I don't know whether I have the guts to actually pick him because he just has never shown it and he's in his sixth season.
The percentage likelihood of him actually breaking out has me more inclined to plan for having to trade him in as a correction trade rather than starting with him and then having to decide who to trade to because he hasn't quite worked out. I can see the upside, but I'll correction trade if need be. I don't think he's going to be a very punishing pick, even if he does break out. I mean, he'd have to break out by 24 points, Mark, to hit an average of 90. So it is a big jump. Yeah. He might only jump to 80, and a jump of 14 points really wouldn't be too flash either. So there are risks involved.
Might be okay this year, though. That's the thing. Like, are we not lowering our expectations? Obviously, maybe last year we were aiming for closer to 100, and this year we're aiming for 90. But if you're getting someone cheap and they're averaging low to mid-80s, is that not a reasonable outcome for you?
I suppose so, and especially if you only have one of those types of players. I certainly wouldn't be picking more than one of them because even though we expect the scores to drop, it is an anomaly. We haven't had the scores this low before, and there is a chance that it might go up as well. So you don't want to start locking yourself into too many 80 players as well and then having to make the trade and being forced to waste one eventually anyway. So I think that if you only have one player that you're happy to average 80 for the season, that's probably okay, but probably I wouldn't want two of those types of players in my team.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I just think that if they're averaging low 80s and the difference is between them averaging low 80s and someone that you pay another 100,000 for averaging high 80s, then you're not actually losing that much. I think that you're right that you don't want to have too many of those guys in your team, but even potentially starting a couple or pushing it out to three, I think that the downside isn't as much this year if they don't actually break out to that really premium level. I don't think it's going to restrict your scoring as much as it would have in the past because you don't have the same ceiling that you're aiming for. So that's why I'm probably more in favor of picking some more of these mid-prices than the premium defenders. I know some teams are looking at 4 or 5 defenders that are over 440,000. I can't see myself picking more than 2 or 3 of those guys. I just think that it's crying out to go for value this year, because even the great guys don't have that much upside.
No, I do agree with you. I just think that over the course of the season, it is likely that you'll have enough of them break out. I mean, it only takes a few. There's only six backline spots. I wouldn't be surprised if the sixth highest averaging backline player ends up averaging 90 this year, even though there's talk of 85. And if that happens, that is still a 10-point difference that you're accounting for. And I understand it could go either way this year. So it is up to you how you want to play the season, really. But my approach would be to limit the exposure, whereas your approach would be to maximize that approach because you identify value in those players.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still sort of talking about two or three players that are being exposed to potentially averaging within that range rather than the one that you're talking about. And there's potential that those guys could be traded around the buys or towards later in the season when we have a better idea about the expectations regarding the defenders. So maybe if the sixth defender can average 95, then I can actually change my strategy and use some trades on those players if I needed to later on. But I just can't see myself starting without sort of two people in the mid-price range at least.
Anyway, we've got a couple more questions about that right at the end of the show. So we'll move on to more of the players and then we can finish with that at the end of the show anyway. Garrick Ibbotson's the next guy on the run sheet from Fremantle, $342,000. And in terms of mid-prices, he's certainly been fairly highly touted, averaged 94.5 in 2013. And we've seen him average 81.5 in only his second season. And we've long seen scoring ability from Garrick Ibbotson. It's just that he hasn't really had continuity of role. And especially continuity of a role that's reasonably scoring. How do you think his prospects look for 2015, Mark?
Apparently he's fit. He has had a bit of a niggle, which meant that he did miss the first NAB game, but they brought him in for NAB 2 against the Swans, and those are pretty horrible conditions for the game, but they did try and get him free and get the ball in his hands, and that bodes well for him. But I think that I guess he's a little bit like Higgins in the sense that he's only ever had really one really decent season, and he has missed a lot of games over the journey, which is definitely concerning. I think that given the fact that you'd expect Freo to win quite a few games this year, and that with Duffield injured early on, and you'd expect their rebounding defender to score quite well, I think that scoring-wise, he is an awesome buy for his price. It's just the durability that is really the concern. So is it just a risk? I think he's probably, on the balance, a pretty good risk, but he's certainly not a lock for my team, but he's definitely in consideration.
Yeah, I like that he's already hit an average of 90 plus. He's lined up in probably half my draft team so far this preseason, so that's probably a pretty good sign. Next guy, Jaron Geary from St Kilda, $332,000. We have touched on him before, I think in last week's show. Averaged 80 in 2013, Mark, and only averaged 69 after an injury-ravaged year last year. What do you reckon?
Presents value at his price. He's coming into his eighth season, though, so I think that there's probably some more significant issues that are stopping him averaging 80 than just the discount that he gets from being injured last year. This discussion about poor possession or poor decision-making coming out of the back line, restricting his scoring potential, and so despite his 150, he's not really in consideration for me.
Next guy, Clancy Pierce.
Weekend, I think he scored 30 points. He played a tagging role, which did not seem to work out very well for him. I think he was running around with Karen Jack all day. So, yeah, 30 points. He was in my team. He was, like, locked and loaded. I really liked him. The fact that he'd averaged 91 before a couple of years ago, he's one of Ross Lyon's favourites, has had a really long, good, strong preseason. He seems to be fit. But then the Ryan Crowley news hit during the week, and Freo are going to be searching for another tagger. The fact that Pierce was given the role against Jack on the weekend, that scares the shit out of me and made me take him out of my team. I'd have to see some really new information. He wasn't going to be the tagger for me to put him back in.
Agree with you, Mark. Gary Rowan from Sydney's next. Last year in the final series really took a step up in his career. Do you think he can carry it on into 2015?
Probably. He does have, again, durability concerns. He's cheap for a reason, I think. We all started him round one last year and most people traded him out, even though he did manage to get back into the side. Definite no for me.
I agree with you. 270, I'm not going to pay that much for the same injury risk again. Jamie McMillan, $270,000, and we've talked about him last episode when we did the NAB Cup review. Elevated to the leadership group, $270,000 means that he's at that basement price where it's a lot lower risk than investing $400,000 in the player.
He's a really tricky pick for me. I think if it was 220,000, he'd absolutely be in my team. At 270, you sort of want that little bit extra. I don't think that he's got the potential to become a keeper, but I do think he's got potential to provide value as against the rookies that are available in that position, and seems to have pretty good job security. So he's definitely in the mix.
I like him because of his price point. I think if you're going to take a mid-pricer, they all seem pretty risky. And so the less you spend, sort of the safer you are in a sense. Kristen Jack. I don't know how to pronounce this one either, Mark. Jack.
I think it's just Jacks.
Jacks. All right.
Yeah, look, we're really, really uncertain about his role. Probably it's just a little bit too expensive. I think if it was 180, 190,000, he might be in some teams, but it's just not feeling it.
Brett Goods, he's struggled to make it into the team last year.
Because when he did, he played awful. Brett Goods was, I'm guessing that he was injured. I know he played a lot of games in the VFL, so I didn't actually hear that he was injured, but when he played AFL, he barely touched the ball, and when he did, he just kicked it like directly out on the full. He was atrocious. So might flourish under a new coach, but he'd want to be better than last year.
Billy Smets from Geelong, Mark. 215,000, you're getting a 4-year
player. Sorry, who's that?
216,000 for a fourth-year player. Chris Scott says that it's his position to lose almost in the best 22, and there's a spot for him in the back line. And even though he's really frustrating as a Geelong supporter, unlike McMillan, who's 270, Billy Smets is right at that basement price. So you're really comparing him to a rookie in that sense. He could be an option.
Yeah, I think if the rookies don't come up, then maybe his name does become an option, but he's certainly struggled to cement a spot in that best 22 in the last couple of years, so he'd want to improve significantly.
Brendan Whitecross for Hawthorns just played in one VFL game over the weekend, Mark, so he might struggle to make it back into round one, and I noticed that the teams are starting to plan as though he might not make it at all.
Yeah, I think like 8 weeks ago when we talked, he was probably as big a lock as anyone in the back line. Great value at under 200,000, seems like. I mean, if he really is fully fit, he could average more than 75 and potentially even become one of those low-end keepers that we talked about. With that said, don't think that he'll make round one. If he does, I know that they play this weekend and then they've got like a 17-day break. So he's probably some chance of making their round one side. He's going to be probably a good chance of being a sub and having his game time managed in those first few rounds. He's going to be a really tricky line ball call. I'll definitely consider him if he's named.
I think if he's named, even if I'm not going to start him, I think I'd be happy to put him on the bench until they build up his game time, because that would indicate to me that clearly want to get him back into their best 22. Nathan Brown, 140K. He has terrible scoring history as a key position defender. I guess people are desperate.
You've really sold him to me there. He's got terrible scoring history.
I don't know. People are desperate. Oh, what can I say? I don't really know why we would be considering him. I think his scoring potential is too low to be worthwhile.
He did average over 60 in 2010, mate. He's in my team. He's got 97 on the weekend. He's going to do that every week. No, he probably won't do that, but he...
Is he in your team?
The other rookies are crap. The other rookies are crap. He's been in my team for weeks.
We're not going to talk about them today, but I mean, you know, Joel Hamling and Freeman played VFL game. I thought there was a few that people were tossing around. Didn't know we were reaching
and
for key position
really see
defenders.
Any of them, I don't really see any of them averaging more than 50. And Brown, with a few of the Collingwood, a big change in Collingwood defence this year, he probably is going to have a much bigger role than he's had in the past. So there's probably an opportunity to average 60.
Really scrambling for like 5 points of improvement from a key position defender. I don't know. I'd not really looked at him, Mark, but I guess, you know, he's a good backup option at the very least. He will play the games for them. We're moving on from the actual individual players now onto a little bit of strategic questioning. So we have touched on it a little bit already, but we'll start off with Andrew Donison's question, or Dono79 on Twitter. Is there any point getting top price defenders, or is the general ceiling, maybe 85 points per game, going to be too low to risk it? So where do you sit in terms of the guys that we talked about? Are you going to touch the absolute premium guys at all, the top 5, 6, 7 players, or are you looking for more value premiums, or are you looking even lower than that, more at mid prices?
Sure. So I think Malcheski is a really interesting pick because he's like a clear standout. But like I said, I think his price is going to decrease, so that sort of rules him out. Almost all of the other guys, except for Smith, are getting on in their careers. So are likely to have their game time or total games played managed at least a little bit. and maybe we've seen their ceilings, given that we've seen sort of 10 seasons out of a lot of these guys. So from that perspective, I think that we can reasonably well predict how they're going to score, and they're not going to score above 100. So I would actually be surprised if there were any defenders scoring over 100 this year, which means that there has to be a real calculation from previous years where we've had Gibbs and Deledio and Goddard and defenders like that. So that means to me that my sixth defender can probably average in the 80 to 85 bracket rather than trying to get them up to the 90 to 95 bracket. So that means I can maybe gamble on some more mid-prices, gamble on some of those lower-priced picks as well. Even the premiums that I'm looking to pick, I might pick two of the higher-priced ones. Like I said, Hibbard was locked in, and maybe someone like Shaw or Smith or someone along those lines. But then I'm probably, after that, I'm probably looking in that 400 to 440 bracket for one or two players and some mid-prices. I just can't see any reason why I'd want to spend too much money in my defense this year, because I'm not going to be scoring much points back there.
Interesting, especially considering I tend toward the mid-prices. It is really interesting that we've landed a bit differently on it. I think I'm playing it a bit more conservative in terms of the fact that I'm really looking for six premium defenders that can average 90. I don't expect the sixth highest averaging defender to average 95 this year, but I'm thinking that there'll be a fair few extending into 90 or 89. And so I'm looking for all my defenders to eventually score around that mark. So if I'm looking for a guy to increase in value, just because the ceilings drop doesn't mean that all of a sudden I'm happy with a guy going from 80 to 85 and sacrificing 5 points per game in max value by forfeiting a 90 point per game player. I don't really want to do that unless I'm making, let's say, 10 points of value. So if I'm getting a player that's starting at 75 and going up to 85, I might be happy to forfeit the 5 points, but I'd need to get value back elsewhere. So I wouldn't just go to mid prices because I don't want to spend as much money in the back line this year. I'm still trying to get the top six, and I think that I should be able to get six defenders that can average 89 plus. And so any defender that does less than that will need to deliver value. Otherwise, I'll have to factor in a trade into the consideration, and that makes a player a lot less attractive, obviously. So I think we've actually landed quite differently on that, Mark.
Yeah, we have. I think one of the reasons why I'm not necessarily too concerned about getting the top six is that I think that the range of defensive scores are going to be really squashed. And so you're going to have 40 players within 10 points of each other, whereas in the other positions, you might have six forwards at 110, and then the next level might be 100. So you, like, there's a huge difference between actually getting the top six right and not getting it right.
Where I sort of got that 5 points from was because that's the line I sort of draw for the premiums in the midfield. Like we were discussing in the midfield show, I'm happy not to get a guy who's averaging 115 if he's averaging 110, but he's increased 10 points in average. But I wouldn't be happy with a guy who is averaging 105, losing 10 points in a single position over the course of the year. And I think considering the base average is higher in the midfield, I definitely would be wary of giving up 10 points per game on defenders when their premiums that can actually achieve that average.
I don't want to come across that I'm saying too much about, oh, I'm just trying to pick 85 averaging players and I'm not spending too much money there. I'm still definitely aiming for players that have that upside to get into the 95 range, but their downsides may be that little bit lower than looking for a safer pick like a Heath Shaw that I know is going to average between like 90 and 100.
That's probably the key difference in the approach, I guess. A little bit more conservative from me and a little bit more risk-taking from you. And I think, to be honest, at this point in the preseason, both are fairly valid options. And I've seen good coaches go both ways at the moment, Mark. And I know that doesn't help our...
No, your strategy is crap, Mark.
I know that doesn't help our community a lot, but I think you'd agree, wouldn't you? Jokes aside?
Look, I do. And jokes aside, I think that they're both reasonably valid approaches this year, and it's part of your philosophy and how you're going to go about it, and we all have to have different teams, and that's what makes it interesting.
And this year, we'll see probably more variants than we've ever seen before, so that'll account for a fairly interesting Supercoach ladder, I think, over the course of 2015. One more question about mid-prices, defensive mid-prices from Sam Siddle. How many do you think you'll actually go? So where are you currently sitting on that, Mark? Can you tell us that?
Sure, I'm sitting at two.
Is that including Nunes?
Well, no, it's not including Nunes. We didn't even cover Jack Nunes on today's show.
Oh my God. All right, just lock him in, guys.
I think that the reason why we didn't cover him is because everyone thinks that he's so obvious that he doesn't need covering. Is that
Yeah.
right?
Look, I put it together. I admit,
Has
I
never been
forgot
in
to
my
put him
team.
in. Yeah, he's just locked. He's just been so locked, I forgot about him.
Everyone thinks that he's locked. I'm missing something. I'm sure I'm missing something. Oh, look, I might give in at the last minute. I might just find some extra money there. Just has not been in my team.
His preseason hasn't been impressive to you?
Look, it's been okay. His season last year was okay. In the game against Essendon, he had 11 possessions to three-quarter time and then had 10 touches in the last quarter, which got his score up. I don't really notice him even when they're playing. He's, I don't know, I'm not that impressed by Nunes. I had him in draft for a decent amount last year, so I was watching him reasonably closely, but he just doesn't get a lot of the ball or do, like, he's not an amazing player. He might be okay, and I just don't think that he's actually a mid-pricer this year. You're paying 435,000 for him. You're paying a premium price. You may as well put like an extra 40,000 in and get someone like James Kelly, who I do expect to average higher than Nunes this year. I think there's even better value around his price. Someone like Scott Thompson has averaged 98 before. I don't think Nunes has any chance of getting anywhere near that. I just can't really justify bringing him into my team. I think his durability is probably his strongest asset.
Wow, that's quite a different picture that you've painted, I guess, Mark.
And look, I am way out of step with everyone in the Supercoach community on this, and I am completely aware of that. And I'm happy to be proven wrong, and that's okay. I just don't see him burning me that bad by not including him. He's not David Swallow that he's just going to destroy season and average 110 over the course of 8 weeks or something. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah, I just don't see the downside of not picking him so much.
All right.
And if I was saying how many mid prices I had in my team, I would not be including him as one of those mid prices, because I think that if you're paying over 400,000 in defense this year, then to me that's probably not a mid pricer because of the reduced requirements for scoring.
Well, I've gone from something as crazy as, four or five mid prices in my craziest draft teams to all the way down to naught at the moment. I've got no mid prices in my back line at the moment. I'm spending pretty heavy down there, and that's just because, like I said, with the options all being poor, I figure I might as well just pay the cash and at least get a guy that treads water, a little bit similar to the rucks. In the rucks, you obviously have the scoring change affecting that. That's the approach that I'm going for. Just loading up and not worrying about it. Last question for the week, Mark. We've had a lot of talk in the back line, a lot of strategic talk, a lot of debate about individual players, and really, there's a lot of options for all our community out there, and we don't quite have our minds made up ourselves, so that makes things a little bit tough. But Clint Stott just wants to know who to have, please. So, who would be your best picks, Mark, at this very point in the back line? And at least that's something that people can start off with at the end of this show.
I think I'm going to approach it a little bit differently. I want to say what I think your structure should be. I think that three premium defenders, two mid prices, three rookies is the way to go. Fill it with whoever you want.
I obviously don't agree with that at all. I don't think that you need to go with a specific structure. I think my structure obviously is different to that, but the one player that I have is James Kelly. I think that playing in the midfield this year, he's a bit of a smoky that hopefully should come good. That's the end of this week's show, Mark. That was pretty long. A lot of defenders that we talked about.
Obviously, presenting the show, I have to sort of justify where I'm coming from and my decisions and engage with you, Marcus, but don't want to come across as too confident either that this is a really speculative position this year, and I don't think any of us are really 100% sure how we should handle it. So, like you said, there probably is a few different ways of going about it that maybe they will all work in the end. Maybe there'll be a huge difference that wasn't expected. And yeah, I think things are really different down there this year. So, everyone's a bit uncertain, and you should come up with your own solution.
Well, at least we have 30 trades to play with, not the 20 anymore. So we'll have an opportunity. Yeah,
Corrections.
that'll be good. So I'm really looking forward to setting our teams, Mark, and getting to actual trades. Next week, we're going to go to the final NAB Cup review. We're going to look at the rookies, and then we have one last preseason show before the season starts. Remember, on supercoachcoach.com.au, you can sign up for our open leagues. Our league codes are there, and our Supercoach Coach group invitation as well can be found there. And don't forget, we've got a forum on on there and it's humming with activity at the moment. So get involved. And if you've got any questions, head on over there. It's the best place to get involved because we've got a good community of coaches that are ready to answer your questions at any time. Whereas if you ask on social media, sometimes you have to wait for Mark or I to get around. Our forum's always humming. So make sure you guys check that out. And remember, facebook.com/supercoachcoach and @supercoachcoach. Thanks for all your support so far. Mark, anything else?
Did we really tell people not to pick Ablett?
I think that may have happened, but of course, there's going to be a lot more Ablett talk, I'm guessing, in the next 2 weeks. And not only Ablett talk, but if not Ablett, do we take Rockliffe now? And, you know, if we save all this money, does that mean that Gray becomes a much more of a sure thing in the forward line? So we've got two more shows to discuss all these ramifications, and hopefully we hear a little bit more from Gary Ablett himself over the next week, Mark. Well, enjoy the last week of the NAB Challenge Series, guys. I'm really looking forward to getting the consolidated stats all together. I'm a bit of a stats head at times. And it'll be nice to see all the TOG stats, all the points per minute stats. Yeah, I'm sure you'll be poring over them too, mate. I'm very much looking forward to that and being able to set our team. So hope this episode was of use to you guys. Remember, if you've got any feedback or follow-up questions, hit us up on social media. We'll catch you guys next week. See ya.
See ya. See ya.